Paper 7, section 6, which is old single column, page 87. All right, so let's see. I guess all we have to do is just remember what we did last week, the previous two sections where they spun us up on the whole concept of bestowal sons. So now just in a little more general context, they've got this section on the paradise sons, which includes the bestowal sons and a little bit more. Well, actually, a lot more, but a little bit more revealed, a lot more unrevealed. so let's just jump in.
6. The paradise sons of God. The lack of a knowledge of the multiple sons of God is a source of great confusion on Urantia. And this ignorance persists in the face of such statements as the record of a conclave of these divine personalities. Quote, when the sons of God proclaimed joy and all of the morning stars sang together, unquote. Every millennium of sector standard time, the various orders of the divine sons foregather for their periodic conclaves.
Okay, we got to stop there. We got to think about this little quote because it's pretty fun. Okay, so if you're familiar with the book of Job, you're familiar with something on the order of that quote-unquote quote. they do the normal things that I'm sure are obvious. If you look it up in Job, suns won't be capitalized and morning stars won't be capitalized. But instead of saying shout for joy, they have proclaimed for joy, so it's a little bit more appropriate. But the fun part is, it's beyond those normal sorts of tweakings. So if you look up the passage, you'll see when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. So notice what they did. They flipped the order because, that's the logical order. It's the sons of God first and then their deputies are coming along for the ride, so they're second. But notice also, did you catch the word all.
Yeah.
Okay. It all is in the second part, in the original, but the objects have switched. It says all the sons of God in the original. Okay, well that's not gonna work. We're not talking about all the sons of God at this conclave. We're just talking about the sons of God from a given minor sector. So you got this given little region out in the Milky Way somewhere, or if it's in one of the other super universes, somewhere out there in the galaxy, you've got this minor sector, and all the sons of God in that minor sector come together for one of these conclaves. So it's all the sons of God in that minor sector, but it's not all the sons of God. So notice how they kept it all, so you've got the sons of God from that minor sector, and then all the morning stars, from that. Okay, so just pretty fun the way they shuffled that, to make it more precise. Yeah.
Of all that of greatest knowledge is to know the life and the way.
Yeah, right. There's just life of Jesus and how he lived it. Yeah. Uh-huh. Of all human knowledge, that which is of greatest value. Yes. And it is. It is just knowledge. Yeah, but you do have to kind of chuckle, and they say things like, the lack of a knowledge of the multiple sons of God, like that's surprising. We barely have figured out that God isn't some guy with a beard . Nonetheless, it's just really fun the way they'll use these Bible passages and just shuffle them around as need be to get them so that they're appropriate. So millennium of sector standard time, we're talking about a minor sector here, but in a whole super universe, You know, at all three levels in the super universe, it's the same standard time. You know, they just put in the sector to, so it's obvious that we're, you know, who's having this conclave. It's the minor sector that's having a conclave, which is only only a logical thing. But that millennium, if this hasn't sunk in, you know, this is a good time to just reiterate this or stress this. So the way this works, in the various places in the universe, various levels, you have, these literal architectural spheres that have a rotation. So they have a day. Okay, so you have that, that very fundamental fact of a day, one time rotating on its axis. So, for instance, Uversa, and then at the major and minor sectors, they're synchronized likewise. You have that Uversa day. Okay. And then, no matter what level it is, you start with the day, the Gerasim day, or whatever, Densha day. I mean, you start with the day, and then a week, everything is a decimal system. So a week is 10 of those days, whatever those days are. And then a year, so a quote-unquote week is 10 of those days, and a quote-unquote year is 100 of those days. And those are the two basics that, multiples you have. And then, millennium is just 1,000 of those years, whatever those years are. Okay, so in this case, when you're talking about a Uversa day, and then hence a Uversa year, you're talking about 8.2, 8 and a fifth Urantia years. So we're talking about 8,200 years here. Their millennium here is 8,200 years. Okay, so about every 8,200 years, all the sons of God, along with the bright morning stars, get together for one of these private meetings. You notice it's a conclave. It's not some big public shindig. It's a conclave. It's a very private meeting. Because they're talking about the big picture things that would be, in violation of they would be in rebellion to be, letting that out in, into the evolutionary domain. But there are those that have to be overseeing this from who have the bigger picture, who know the bigger picture. Does everyone know, literally, the word conclave? It means with key. I mean, you have to come with a key to get in. See? And conclave means with key, the conclave of the cardinals, when you're electing a pope, that sort of thing. Okay. Just the fact that they flipped them around and switched the all, which is the all, and so.
But aren't they also saying that that we're ignorant, even though in the Bible it does say this? I mean,
right.
38:7. I mean, they can't believe that they still, they left, they put that in there, and they probably didn't mean to put it in.
No, I mean, it's not that, it's not a case of that. It's just, when you're talking about Job, you're talking about a very old book. And so, it's just like Jesus always used to do. Have you not read, where it says such and so? They do the same thing. They keep reminding us. It's like, if you would stop rationalizing and just, think about the book directly, you've got this book that has a number of statements in it that are actually quite specific about a number of the details of the whole hierarchical cosmos, but instead you've always had a tendency to rationalize around them, and as the translations have gone into modern times, you've just fuzzed them worse and worse, and so now you won't even say sons of God, you'll replace it with angels. They're just, it's just like with the language, they're always telling us with the language. You need to reestablish a direct hold on specificity, and details.
So whoever wrote the book of Job must have had a powerful thought.
Well, and I mean, not so much, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily have to be that. I mean, remember where those ancient books are, you know, they're coming out of the whole Sumerian, Egyptian, tradition. Right. So this stuff is drifting, you know, forward from all kinds of, you know, definitive sources. Or
come from McNaught.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Yeah, I mean, But, you know, it's like they said, I mean, there are things that are little snippets that have sort of been just woven into that story, you know, and they may be kind of out of context now, but it's just like with the Adam and Eve story. I mean, you got some solid pieces that are literally tied back, you know, to the actual event or events, but then you've got a whole bunch of falderal woven around it. All right, let's get to the details now.
The eternal Son is the personal source of the adorable attributes of mercy and service which so abundantly characterize all orders of the descending sons of God as they function throughout creation. All the divine nature, if not all the infinity of attributes, the eternal Son unfailingly transmits to the paradise sons who go out from the eternal isle to reveal his divine character to the universe of universes.
I should mention here, because you'll see it a number of places in the book, it's a great example. I mean, you use the word adorable, and everyone's going, puppies, what does it have to do with puppies? It's literally, I mean, again, I mean, the root there is oration. I mean, the attributes of mercy and service that are spoken to, you know, have you heard, of the attributes of mercy and service, you know, or like adorations, you know, it's in that literal sense, not in some fuzzy, cute kitten sense or something, you know. There's a number of words like that that are actually kind of tough for us now because we've got some kind of distracting things attached to them. But it's literally to oration. Okay, so, just notice some of the striking things in there. If not all the infinity of attributes. You're going, well, wait a minute. I mean, a paradise sun is a very finite object. How am I going to cram, you know, infinity in there, even if I have a big crowbar? I mean, we're not talking quantity here. We're talking quality. You know, you can put a lot of quality in a small package. Your adjuster is an example. You know, so, you know, it's in that sense that, that there's only the sort of inescapable limitations in play. Otherwise, it's an unlimited expression of the Son. All right, so just, you know, that's we've got two points that you're going to see in play. I mean, that one there of this very direct expression of the original Son to his sons, and then also we have this very direct expression of spirit and personality of the Father to the original Son. And so, you know, that's what they're going to be playing off on a lot. It's just that, you know, this sort of undiminished, in many ways, expression that's in play here.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
The eternal Son transmits to the paradise sons all the divine nature, but not an infinity of attributes. He has the infinity of attributes, and he could, but he doesn't.
When you say if not all the infinity of attributes, it means they, you know, they don't know exactly, you know, all that's involved here, but they do know basically what I said. I mean, you know, nothing is going to be taken away unless, you know, it involves just an insurmountable barrier for transmission. I mean, or even you know, to not even use the word downstepping even, but it's just a direct expression. But they're always very conservative in their language. Remember, we've talked about this. They will never state definitively something, even if, you know, there's not a being that any of them have ever talked to that can find the slightest possibility that there could be any other logical conclusion. But if they don't have direct, tangible evidence or record to speak to, they will qualify their language. They're very conservative like that. Yeah. You know, it would say "but not" instead of "if not." You know, if it was. You know,
The original and eternal Son is the offspring person of the first completed and infinite thought of the Universal Father. Every time the Universal Father and the Eternal Son jointly project a new, original, identical, unique, and absolute personal thought, that very instant, this creative idea is perfectly and finally personalized in the being and personality of a new and original Creator Son. In spirit nature, divine wisdom, and coordinate creative power, these Creator Sons are potentially equal with God the Father and God the Son.
The potential will be explained here in the next paragraph, so let's just do it. Oh, you got something before we do that?
I mean, if you read it, okay, so you know there's only 700,000 Creator Sons, right? No?
Well, what's your point?
Well, so that means there's only 700,000 new, original, identical, unique, and absolute personal thoughts.
So far.
Well, I mean, just without going into details, what about the Creator Son that we just read about in the central universe? And, you know, I mean, okay, not to mention all the undisclosed sons. I mean, just, you know, they're just about to remind us of this. I mean, there's, you will, you know, when you read some of these things, you go, well, wait a minute, that sounds pretty limited. You need to ask yourself, well, is that something I need to try to understand that there really is a very definitive limitation, like there's only 7 super universes? You know, is that the fact that I'm feeling like, wait a minute, that sounds a little too limited? It's probably, you know, it might be because there's a whole bunch of stuff that's unrevealed that would make it seem a lot less claustrophobic. But you know, one of the main things in play, I mean, you know, there obviously is a very finite number of Creator Sons. You know, or Magisterial Sons or anyone, you know, any other. I mean, and you do have to come to terms with finite means finite. And, you know, there are some very there's a definite smallness to the grand universe. When you really start to expand your consciousness of things, you know, you can immediately sense, it's like, you know, there's no way that eternity is going to fit in this space. I mean, yeah, it might be bigger than anything I could ever imagine traveling around in a rocket ship in, but you know, when I let go of such simplistic constraints of my consciousness, you know, the grand universe will start to strike you as decidedly small.
Well, if we're going to read it literally, it does say that only when they jointly project a new original.
Right. Well, we're about to read about when the two of them are jointly doing that, and you know, others are involved. But you know, not to mention, like I said, all the unrevealed ones. But yeah, I mean, you have this. You know, this. The idea here is you just have this very definitive act of distributing creator nature. And you only need so many creators for the finite. It's just, I mean, it's a, you know, it's just, there's only so many needed.
Well, when the outer space levels don't...
Right, that's a totally different story.
I mean, then they'll get more.
Who knows what else, you know, will happen there. Yeah, right, we have no idea what will happen there. Yeah.
Not only was Jesus' potential equal with the Father and the Son, but he was actually equal with the Father and the Son. So... What are they?
The answer is no, because we're about to read the answer is no. I mean, you know, potentially, but that doesn't actualize, and they're about to tell us why.
Not Jesus, but you mean all the Creator's sons?
All the Creator's sons. Let's read the next paragraph, you know, and understand why they said potentially. Okay? All right?
The Creator's sons go out from paradise into the universes of time, and with the cooperation of the controlling and creative agencies of the Third Source and Center, complete the organization of the local universes of progressive evolution. These sons are not attached to, nor are they concerned with, the central and universal controls of matter, mind, and spirit. Hence are they limited in their creative acts by the pre-existence, priority, and primacy of the First Source and Center and his coordinate absolutes. These sons are able to administer only that which they bring into existence. Absolute administration is inherent in priority of existence and is inseparable from eternity of presence. The Father remains primal in the universes.
Okay, so you see what they're trying to say? I mean, they're trying to get you to recognize that Creator sons are distinctly limited in what they do. But that's not because the Father and the Son shortchanged them in some way. You know, that they're made wanting in quality or something. You know, they have the fullness in potential, but they are absolutely humble and subservient to the hierarchy above them. You know, that includes master architects, for instance. You know, the master architects, you know, set up the plans for everything and project it, and they work within those. They can't go outside those lines. See, so when I say it that way, I mean, it should strike you that, oh, this isn't just some abstract thing. You know, it's like, well, okay, so what do I really care when all is said and done about all these details of the arrangement between the Eternal Son and the Creator Son and blah, blah, blah. You know, they're trying to point out that at the highest levels, you'll see this when we get into the next paper too, at the highest levels, form is recognized as valuable. They know that the absolutely best thing to do is to stay within the lines that the First Source and Center of all things and beings has defined. You know, why would they, you know, re-emphasize that over and over again in every way possible? You know, that it's not just you that are somehow being oppressed by some foreign potentate to stay between the lines. Ooh, now I know why they say that, see? I mean, it's because of the Lucifer Rebellion. We're just immersed in this. No one's going to tell me where to drive. If I'm going to drive off there, I'm going to do it. I don't have to stay between the lines. You know, who made you my boss? I mean, humans have to challenge themselves on that. It's a subtle little voice that whispers in your ear all the time. It's the voice of the Lucifer Rebellion. You know, you must learn to submit yourself to form. And why would you want to learn that? Because when you get wiser, you recognize that that is the absolutely best thing for you. The immature self doesn't see that. You know, immature self sees the opposite, sees it as a constraint on your liberty, yeah, unbridled liberty. You know, the God of liberty, you know, seeded our culture with that thought. They make a very definitive point of stressing this, that from the highest to the lowest, this is the way it works. Recognize form. There's nothing arbitrary about it. It's absolutely perfect. There couldn't be anything better for you than to stay in the form.
Advancing civilization, laws become increasingly directive.
Right.
I have a negative reaction to that. What do you mean, directive? The law is going to tell me what I have to do.
I mean, you don't have to do that, but to not follow it wouldn't be wise.
Human laws, but as
you go forward, you know, what do human laws become? They become the expression of that which is within. The law is fundamentally written in your heart, you know, and God-conscious citizens come together and institute an external structure that reflects the truth of the law that's written in your heart. The law external is the law internal.
Doesn't that flow from what's written in the heart first, though?
Right, of course. Ethics is second. Morality is first. You know, you have a moral consciousness first, and then you establish a code of ethics second from that moral consciousness. Like we've talked about many times, there's a tendency in our ignorance and our self-righteousness to, for everyone to have some code of ethics, and then people to clamor with sharp elbows saying, well, mine isn't just any old code of ethics. Mine is morally true. It's just like, fact and truth. Well, you have your facts and I have my facts, and the difference is my facts are true. We're always trying to exalt, the secondary into the primary. We're always trying to do bottom up instead of top down.
The problems that ensue if parents give too much or all the power to their children. The children are immature and they need to know that there are boundaries, there are limits.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we always tend to do this in this ridiculous pendulum swing. You have extremely permissive parents in one generation because the previous generation parents, were clueless and ignorant and had this arbitrary oppressiveness, and so the kids grow up like, well, I'm not going to be like my parents. I'm going to do the exact opposite. Which is either just as bad or possibly worse. There's just, again, everyone thinks in dichotomies, in reactionary dichotomies.
One of the things in your answer book talks about at an early age that a child should learn to have to live without certain things.
Yeah, there's no self-restraint. Credit is a very difficult thing for an unrestrained, immature human to be given. Because it's like, ooh, I've always wanted to get something for free. Everyone knows the way this goes. To think that a child is self-actualizing, just stop and reflect on what you're saying when you think that. In other words, my child is deity. Self-something or other, self-purposing, self-personalizing. My child's a creature, not self anything. that's the role of the parent to give that initial structure for that child of God to have a proper opportunity to blossom within. All right, so creator sons. They're just going to, obviously they spend a little bit more time in Creator Sons because they're a little bit more to the immediate point, but they're going to mention the other two here next.
Much as the Creator Sons are personalized by the Father and the Son, so are the Magisterial Sons personalized by the Son and the Spirit. These are the sons who, in the experience of creature incarnation, earn the right to serve as the judges of survival in the creations of time and space.
Dispensational adjudications.
The Father, Son, and Spirit also unite to personalize the versatile Trinity teacher sons, who range the grand universe as the supernal teachers of all personalities, human and divine. And there are numerous other orders of paradise sonship that have not been brought to the attention of your rancher mortals.
Numerous. You know, so when it says other sons, like in the list of personalities, you might wonder, you know, is it just a couple other? No, numerous. Yeah. So it's not even like, well, maybe there's, you know, you've got the six other super universes, and you kind of have this distinction between, you know, the super universes with the seven basic plans, and, you know, some, maybe you multiply it by seven. No, it's probably a lot more than that. There's probably just lots and lots of sons that are unrevealed. And, you know, and that's always a fun point of speculation. It's like, well, we live in a wild card world. We live on a wild card world. You know, you wonder, is it possible that Michael might have some notion of bringing some unrevealed son into play on this world? It's, yeah, anything is possible.
Between the original mother son and these hosts of paradise sons scattered throughout all creation, there is a direct and exclusive channel of communication, a channel whose function is inherent in the quality of spiritual kinship which unites them in bonds of near-absolute spiritual association. This inter-sonship circuit is entirely different from the universal circuit of spirit gravity, which also centers in the person of the second source and center. All sons of God who take origin in the persons of the paradise deities are in direct and constant communication with the eternal mother son, and such communication is instantaneous. It is independent of time, though sometimes conditioned by space.
Okay, that last little comment in a minute here. But first, notice, okay, in one little paragraph, we have mother twice, original mother, son, eternal mother, son. I mean, I'm hoping you're beginning to appreciate why. You know, we've talked about this. We have that, you know, that located individual on paradise, the eternal son. But when we're talking about something where there's some sort of a linkage to things within, not just, you know, the being that stands without on the aisle, we're talking about that spirit presence. We're talking about the eternal mother son. You know, it's as the eternal mother son that there is a ubiquitous presence in the universe that, on the one hand, can give rise to this ubiquitous spirit gravity influence. And they're saying, but that's not all. Also, via that ubiquity, there is this communication linkage. No matter where a paradise son is, the presence of the eternal mother son is right there. Okay, so obviously there's not going to be any time delay in this communication. It doesn't have to travel anywhere. Okay, so hence the, you know, the fact that there's, you know, it's independent of time. Okay, but it's sometimes conditioned by space. You know, that should remind you of, you know, what they always say about the, when they're contrasting the creator sons and the creator mother spirits. Well, in what sense? So, in other words, I mean, it's obviously not—it's not the eternal mother son that somehow is conditioned by space. I mean, somehow she can't quite get her presence here or something. It's obvious from the bottom up that there's some issue here with space. So, what, you know, how would you understand that? In other words, the signal strength might depend on the location of the paradise son. You know, the signal strength might go down for some reasons that, you know, we're not going to understand, in some location compared to some other. So it might be, you know, sometimes it's obviously not a very big issue, but, sometimes conditioned by space.
Let's say Michael leaves the local universe and goes to a conclave,
mm-hmm.
and he's in a different space. So, I mean, what is there to coordinate over there?
Well, I mean, if he leaves the local universe, uh-huh. He's now utilizing the next mother presence above the creative mother spirit. You know, the reflective mother spirits of the super universe take over as the coordinating, you know, individuality of the whole. You know, now the whole is the super universe instead of the local universe. But it's, there's no issue there. It's not because of lack of mother presence. But again, that's not the issue either. Notice that they're trying to make that specific, that it's not that Michael has to go up through the hierarchy of mothers. He's tapping directly into the eternal mother-son presence. You know, no other lower mother. You know, here, let's go ahead and use this fancy new chart that someone over there made. he's just using this mother presence directly. He's not having to, you know, feed it up through any of the other stuff here. You know, it's a direct linkage to the spirit presence of the eternal mother-son. Okay, so, and remember that's, let me just finish that thought first before I go into that. If there's something that's conditioned by space, it's not a mother issue like that either. It has to be something, you know, to do with physical energy issues or something, you know, because there's a lot of variability. You know, they allude to this some, like, for instance, you know, when they're talking about the speed of a solitary messenger, the effective speed of a solitary messenger, it all depends upon what kind of an energy environment that solitary messenger, which is a very spirit fact, not unlike this high spirit connectivity we're talking about here, that's effective speed is conditioned by space. He'll have a different effective speed along this path than along this path because the energy issues on this path are different than on this path. You know, these are very subtle things of which we know nothing of, you know. But, you know, they're just, so it's just a statement, that to remind you that that's in play. You know, again, there's nothing magical that's happening here. If there's something literal happening, there's something literal happening, and it's subject to all this, the specifics of literal fact.
What's coming to mind is cell towers.
All right, you know, there wouldn't be a dead zone, okay, but there might be, you know, regions where the signal strength is lower. I mean, now, is the eternal son not going to hear what the magisterial son is thinking because of that? No, I mean, he has infinite ears, okay, so he can pick up the tiniest signal, okay. But, you know, they're just pointing out that there may, you know, there is some fluctuation.
So the eternal mother son is the eternal son. That's just a function that he's.
It's just you just say eternal son when you're thinking of a he that's located at a place that you can walk up to and. Okay. But there's a distributed presence of that second source and center that's not located on paradise. The eternal son is only on paradise, period. Can't move from there. You know, if the eternal son hadn't acquired this experiential deity that allows him to not be merely him-like, but also he-like, but also she-like, you know, and have place-like, be distributed, there, you know, the only, you know, you'd have to literally, like for this communication, something would have to somehow sail from Nebadon all the way across space to get to the eternal sun in paradise. And I mean, who knows what could get in the way there, you know, and there'd be time delay and, okay. But the eternal, as this mother fact, you know, there's a, you know, that being can manifest as a presence, you know, not personally, but, you know, as an impersonal spirit presence, you know, so as a means of distributing spirit gravity and of distributing this connectivity. Yes. Okay, and let's see, there was something else I was going to bring up there, wasn't there? Oh, yeah, right. So now, remember back in the, we were reading in the Father paper, and this, something like this came up. when they taught, they mentioned the Paradise Sons. You remember what they said? They said, okay, remember, they say, now the Paradise Sons have this direct communication linkage. Okay, that we're reading about the specifics of right here. You remember how they phrased that, how they used the passages from the Bible? They said, okay, the Paradise Sons have direct access to the right hand of the Father. Mm-hmm. Who's the right hand of the Father? The Eternal Son, right? So, I mean, so the message can get to the Father because it can get instantaneously, directly from any Paradise Son to the Eternal Son, and then from the Eternal Son to the Father. You know, they have direct access to the right hand of the Father. But creatures like us do not. We do not, we cannot tap in to this direct time-independent linkage directly through the Eternal Mother Son presence. And they mentioned that in there. They said that you have access to the bosom of the Father, i.e. the Mother. You know, the hierarchy of mothers.
But don't we have direct access to the Father via the thought adjuster?
There is that linkage of... but, you know, in terms of... I mean, again, remember, when you're talking about spirit connection, all spirit things go through the Son to get to the Father. You know, when you think of direct, it doesn't mean it's independent of the Son as a spirit fact. It can't be independent of the Son as a spirit fact. It has, I mean, it, because, you know, and again, they're about to stress this. Remember, in that sense, the Eternal Son is the Father. That if you take the Father, and the Father reaches out his personal spirit hand, that hand is called the Eternal Son. I mean, that is the expression of the Father. I mean, as a personal spirit fact, that, you know, the Eternal Son is the Father. He who has seen the Eternal Son has seen the Father as a spirit personality. Now, non-spiritual, non-personal, okay, that's another issue. The Father is a lot more than a personality. But as a direct spirit fact, you know, it goes to the Son.
Are we talking about a different circuit than the personality circuit?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about the personality?
Well, I mean, you are encircuited in this volitional circuit of the Father. But, like, you know, like when we're talking about prayer, like we were just talking about prayer. I mean, you know, these are separate issues. That's getting to the Isle of Paradise through the Son. You know, the Son is not in the way, so that it's not a direct linkage to the Father. The Son is the perfect, frictionless, you know, dissipationless, you know, conduit from you to the center of all things. I mean, the Son is how that actually gets there. It is the hand that reaches out and pulls it in. The Father has divested himself of the ability to grab a hold of spirit and pull it in. When he does that, you call that the Eternal Son. The Eternal Son is him doing that. You know, and it's a bit confusing when you just think of it from that individuality viewpoint. You know, so this is a point where you might find it easier to think of it from the unity viewpoint, so that you don't have all this confusion about, it's like, well, wait a minute, I want to have a direct linkage, you know, to God, and I don't want someone, even someone as perfect and infinite as the Son, to get in the way. Well, okay, from the unity viewpoint, there's one God with many facets, many faces, many hands, whatever word you want to use. This is God the Father. This is God the Son. This is God the Spirit. This is God the Sevenfold, etc. But it's all God, and then some specification of what face of that one God. From the unity viewpoint, there's just one God. From the individuality viewpoint, there's many gods. And it can get kind of confusing at times to try to understand all this from that individuality viewpoint. It's like, well, now how does it, I mean, it gets really confusing. And sometimes it's a lot easier to just go to the unity viewpoint and just understand it there. If from that viewpoint, there's just one God. So of course, he who has seen the Son has seen the Father. You can't see anything except the one God. There is just God. Deity, the fundamental quality of deity is unity, and God is personalized deity. From the unity viewpoint, it's God, period.
All these gods, the ancient, these sevenfold creators, they all came from the thought of both of them?
From a causal sense, and they're about to repeat that in the next paper. You start with the first source and center. And then you bring in the second, and then the two together bring in the third, and everything flows from the three of them. It's very much, as sevenfold creators, you see that pattern that it extends down like this.
And like to be, for instance, the Ancients of Days, they're the judges.
They're also the administrators of the super universe.
Any kind of thing that could happen, they had to create first that could happen with us.
Right, from a unity viewpoint, all you need is God. But from an individuality viewpoint, you have to have multiple individuals because you have to have, there's space and there's time, and so there's separation. And so you have to understand that this aspect of God has been separated from some singular notion and is standing there. There's no break in the perfection. It's just that part of it is standing there, and part of it's standing there, and part of it's standing there. But it's all perfectly synchronized. We're getting way off here on a lot of tangents. Let's get back to understanding this idea of paradise sons are of direct connection to the right hand of the Father. We as creatures we don't have direct connection to the Father. We only have connection to the bosom of the Father. And where this comes in, Joan, you have a number of statements about you have a direct linkage to the Father. But you have, that's all fine from just a truth perspective. But when you start to think about the details of the facts, you have to understand that this distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other, except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. Okay? When you talk, so the detail is, if you're going to think about the linkage between you and the Father, this distinction is vital. That linkage isn't magical. There is a wire, if you will, that connects the two of you. Okay? That wire is called the Mother. Okay? The way. There's a way between you and the Father. Okay? It doesn't matter, you aren't magically connected. There's a conduit through which that linkage flows. That fact is the Mother. You're only connected to the Father through the Mother. He's a member of the cosmic system, the cosmos infinite. You're a member of the cosmic system, the cosmos infinite. We're individuals in a cosmic system, and we're only connected with each other through the individuality of the whole. And so we know they're alluding to that whenever they say coordinate. I didn't mention it, but let's just go back and notice that. In that second of the two paragraphs about the Creator Sons, hence are they limited in their creative acts by the preexistence, priority, and primacy of the first source and center and his coordinate absolutes. Okay, you've got seven absolutes. This distinction is vital. So you have seven individuations in a cosmic system. They're not connected with each other except through the Mother. Okay. The initial revelation, that they give you is, okay, you've got these seven absolutes. Once you've got that figured out, then you're going, well, wait a minute. I know there's nothing magical. These are absolutely distinct things. They're absolutely separated. There's absolutes of infinity. They're absolutely separated. So how do they even know that each other exists? If they're absolutely separated, they don't know of each other. How are they connected one to the other? Through the individuality of the whole. At every level, from the highest to the lowest, you know, even beyond this expression of the hierarchy, there's mother. There's linkage.
Yeah. It's hard to call it mother because you want to put personality, attach personality to it, but it never mentions it as a person.
It's
the individuality.
It is. I mean, the universal mother is a person. Okay? It's a personal purpose effect. The problem is not personality. The problem is the desire to understand everything from the historical individuality viewpoint. What do they tell you right up front when you start reading the Supreme Papers? They say you cannot understand the universe in any literal way with only the individuality viewpoint. It is not understandable. You have to have both viewpoints in play. You have to bring in the unity viewpoint. And the key, when you bring in the unity viewpoint, the first thing that's really distinct that you discover is you start exploring what you see from the unity viewpoint, from the deity viewpoint, rather than the God viewpoint, is this individuality of the whole, this presence, personal purposive presence, rather than personal purposive point. There's a personal purposive presence that you only directly recognize when you take that unity viewpoint. That is the mother. That's the facet of deity that you really can't understand from an individuality viewpoint as a point notion. It's fundamentally distributed throughout the whole. And then the complication, of course, is the whole is a hierarchical fact. So there's a hierarchy of mothers, of these personal purposive presences that connect one fact to another.
What are the other four absolutes?
The three absolute persons,
yeah.
The aisle, and then the three reservoirs. The unqualified absolute, the deity absolute, the universal absolute.
Well, those were the three absolutes I was thinking of.
Oh, well, there's the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit.
That's six.
And the aisle.
The aisle
right. It's actually three potentials, three actuals, and then the Father. You know, two sets of three and then a seven.
Well, the adversity part would be the mother, wouldn't it? I'll repeat it again. 16, you cannot perceive spiritual truth until you feelingly experience it, and many truths are not really felt except in adversity.
In the sense of, if you want to understand how it is literally a fact that God is there with you in adversity. You know, we're told even in the Bible even though you're walking through the valley of the shadow of death, okay, even if you're going through difficult times, okay, that God is there with you. Okay, if you don't want to just believe that magically, if you want to logically understand how that can literally be a fact, when you know that, for instance, the Father pulled himself out of the biggest hole, freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity, okay, how is it that he can be with me in the midst of, not just looking at me from on high, well, look at that poor little creature of mine down there wallowing in the muck. Okay, it doesn't say that. It says that He's right there with you, walking with you. Well, how can that be? He's up there. He's not down there. There is God that remains within. When he pulled himself out, there's God that remains within. And it's like, well, yeah, but it doesn't say that I'm walking immersed in some ubiquitous presence. It says he's walking with me. Yes, it's because there is deity between the Father and you. There's a continuum of deity between the Father and you that he can reach down through that continuum of deity and walk with you. For instance, you know, the Creator Son, you know, said that he's walking there with you as the Spirit of Truth. How does that Spirit of Truth actually get from, let's say he's standing on Salvington right now. Let's say he's not at a conclave or something, okay? Let's say he's standing on Salvington right now. I mean, how on earth is he sitting next to me right now? Okay? It's because his Spirit of Truth reaches through the ubiquitous presence of the Creative Mother Spirit and sits next to me. If she wasn't there, he's conditioned by space. If he's on Salvington, he's not here. You know, but where two or more are gathered, there am I in the... Okay, I mean, how is that... You know, if I'm not just going to believe that magically, there has to be some literal way. He can't reach through a vacuum. There has to be a substance that's like him in some way that he can extend himself through and get to you. Okay, this distinction is vital. That's the mother. That presence is the mother. Okay, so now let's get back to this. Let's get back to the story. Because this, you know, this distinction is vital. Okay, this bit about unlike a paradise son, we do not have direct access to this very, you know, very, very rarefied high presence of the Eternal Mother Son, that we can directly be connected to the Eternal Son, not to mention that we, you know, aren't like the Eternal Son, you know, directly like a paradise son is. So how do we have access? Remember, it says, they have access to the right hand of the Father, direct access to the right hand of the Father. We have direct access to the bosom of the Father. This is a facet of the Father, the infinite upholder. Down from that fact, without any breaks, comes a hierarchy of mother presence. Okay. If we're sitting here in the local universe, and this is the local universe level, this bottom level here, okay, if we're sitting there in the local universe, do I have to go anywhere to get to where the Creative Mother Spirit is? No, she's at every point in the local universe. So right where I'm sitting without moving, I have direct access. No delay. You know, I don't have to wait for some signal to go across space. It doesn't have to go any distance at all. It's instantly in her, right there. And the instant it's in her right here, it's instantly in her in the entire local universe. Because she's not conditioned by space. Okay? So the instant I'm in contact with her here, that fills all of Nebadon. Well, the instant it fills all of Nebadon, okay, she is in the presence of a higher mother presence, the super universe mother, reflective mother spirit. Okay, she's at a point in the super universe. The instant that it's in her, it's instantly in contact with that point in the super universe mother. And she's not conditioned by space either, so it's instantly in all of the super universe. Okay, you get the picture? It goes up, okay, and gets to the Father. But you get there through the bosom of the Father. You get there through the hierarchy that is the mother. That's how you get to the Father.
Through the body.
Okay? Through the bosom of the Father, i.e. the mother. You don't have access to the right hand. No. Okay, so that's, you know, that's what, you know, what's in play here. And just to begin to understand that is to change the whole way you think about this relationship. It takes the magic out of it. You want a real relationship with God. You don't want to just believe in a magical one. Is it not more reassuring to be able to directly understand it literally and know that you're not just wishing that God is hearing you? Okay? If I know definitively, I actually know how my signal gets to the Father. I have a knowledge of a lot of the details. I could maybe start fearing not. Now, I'm never gonna fear not if I'm desperately clinging to my wishful thinking that somehow magically, when I think something, someone hears me in the vast emptiness of dark space. There is no vast emptiness of dark space. There isn't one iota of separation between you and God.
But I should think that the slot adjuster would still be a means of communication directly
right.
with God.
But, okay, the core of the thought adjuster is a fragment of the infinite upholder. Okay? The existential core of the thought adjuster, the virgin adjuster, is just purely an individuation, a measure of that type of father deity, the infinite upholder. Okay, and then that goes out, and more and more, that adjuster acquires experiences. As the adjuster acquires experiential nature wrapped around that existential core, the first layer around the core is like this. The second layer around the core is like that. The third layer around the core is like that, coming all the way down to you. I mean, the more experienced the adjuster, the more rings are wrapped around the core of that tree. How many years of experiential growth are around the core, the heart of that adjuster? Each ring is a ring of experiential nature, of mother-like nature. And, remember, this is the psychic circles in the sevenfold. As you're going inward in the psychic circles, you're penetrating through those layers, getting towards the core. You only can get there through the experiential nature. Remember that, who do they give virgin adjusters to? Okay, which wouldn't have this, or it would just have a very little thin, first year of growth of experiential nature. They only give a virgin adjuster to someone who doesn't need or can't, even at all, draw near.
Like primitives.
Or spirit fusers. Which often are primitive man or spirit fusers. But if you need to actually work your way through and get all the way to first circular, you have to have actual layers of experiential nature, because you're an experiential being. You can only come into relationship with experiential-like stuff. You don't have any relationship to existential deity. You're not an existential fact. But, Paradise Sons do. Paradise Sons are direct distillations of existential deity. So their linkage doesn't have to go through the bosom of the Father. They have this experience, this existential linkage. So all it takes is just that immediate sort of highest level presence, of the Eternal Mother Son. But it's really just the means of linking their existential cores together. But we don't have that. We have to go through experiential deity nature in order to get to the Father. And it doesn't matter if you're trying to get to the universal Father through the personality circuit, or you're trying to get to the other end of the Father, the infinite upholder that is directly connected to the thought adjuster. You can only get there through the Mother. And yes, that is completely different than anything any human has ever thought. It's called revelation. if we already knew that, it wouldn't be in here. It wouldn't be revelation then. It would be a reminder of something you already knew. Okay, this is revelation. It's what we don't know. And by and large, you never would even expect. You know, no one has ever suspected this. But once you describe it, it's like, well, geez, that's actually quite understandable. I mean, how on earth would I talk to you if there wasn't air in this room? If there wasn't something between the two of us that the signal could go on? It can't magically somehow go through nothing. There has to be something that the signal is going through. That's the mother.
I think a lot of Urantia book readers feel or think of their thought adjuster sort of like an implanted microphone up to which you can occasionally stand and go, "Hello, God. This is what I need."
And God drops everything. And,
yeah, God drops everything. And exactly. And I hear people all the time saying, "I've prayed to my thought adjuster."
I mean, you know, what did we just read about prayer? Is that how prayer works? No. I mean, what it is, it just in detail described how prayer works. Prayer doesn't have anything to do with thought adjusters. You know, prayer is the domain of the eternal Son. It's not the domain of the Father. Worship is the domain of the Father, not prayer. He's delegated all the prayer stuff to the eternal Son. It's like, but I want to pray to the Father. Well, then remind yourself that he who has seen the part of the Father that you can pray to, the Son, has seen the Father. The rest of the Father can't be prayed to. I mean, you have to just recognize he divested himself of the part that you pray to. It's now called, it's in a separate fact called the eternal Son. This part has no ear. Okay? The ear is there. But there's no separation here. You know, the ear hears and, you know, the thought knows. The thought God, the word God. You know?
The mechanical mind controllers, is that where we are on level 7? I don't exactly
know. No, that's where your body is. That's not where, the mechanical mind, you know, is, you know, that's basically your body. Your consciousness is in your mind above that, and your mind is what's connected to the Creative Mother Spirit. So you have your body and your mind kind of on those bottom two levels there. Yep.
And for the spirit was poured out on all the flesh in our area, what did that chart look like?
Oh, before Pentecost, the only difference is, for us, there wasn't a master son here. It's just the Creator Son there, okay? So there wasn't a being here that possessed supreme nature. So you had a break in the supreme connection. This is all supreme. This is all supreme. Okay, the only way to get up to the fourth cosmic level is to get up to third, be a third circler. The adjuster can only reach down directly to there. So you had to work your way up through the mother gift to the third circler in order to get an adjuster. Okay. So the only thing that changed, there is a means to get an adjuster. It's just that means is dependent on time. The mother's means of getting adjuster is a function of time. It takes time to go from there to there. Once you have a master son here, now there's a linkage between this level and this level, a continuous supreme-like character between those two levels. But now that linkage is not dependent on time. So instantly, when you have the spirit of truth, you bridge this gap, and an adjuster can come right away. The only thing, the adjuster can only come down you know, to an a supreme expression. It can't go below that, sub-supreme. So in some way, you have to have a supreme conduit between you and that adjuster. You either get a direct one that's independent of time, the spirit of truth, or you get one that's dependent on time. It's called working your way up the psychic circles. But the two are equivalent. If you take the time out, there's no difference.
You said the adjuster, you know, is, keeps putting on experiential layers.
Mm-hmm.
But what are the layers it's putting on below the fourth cosmic level?
Well, I was stretching things a little bit. I mean, I'm trying, you know, I mean, analogies only go so far, okay? I mean, yeah, be careful about, you know, taking these things too literally. But and it's just trying to give you a sense of...
I mean, it can really put on layers that far, right?
Right. I mean, it can only reach down in and of itself. To, you know, so all of its layers are you know, supreme-like. Okay? But, I mean, at the lowest. Obviously, it's coming down through the absolute and the absentite. But, you know, the lowest...
But, like, to the top of the supreme. I mean, those lower layers are also supreme.
The adjuster, when I say the adjuster can only go down to the supreme level... You know, I literally mean this level that has the universal mother, the almighty supreme, the supreme being. Okay, so you can go to down to that level in the staircase that is the sevenfold. Okay, that is the level. Let's see, I want to say this. I mean, that's just the direct level of the functioning of deity in a supreme fashion. That's the supreme level. Below that, you have beings that embody supremacy because they're tied to the Trinity in some way. So they're, you can think of them as distillations kind of the supreme level that can then descend down. But when you're talking about an adjuster, I mean, an adjuster is not a Trinity fact in any way. The adjuster is just a father fact. Okay, so the adjuster doesn't have that Trinity avenue of penetrating all the way down. It just, all it can do is just come down to that lowest expression of you know, a direct expression of the Father, the Supreme Being. You know, this is the Universal Father expressed as far down as he can be directly expressed, the Supreme Being. You know, see, so it can only follow it down to that level. Is that the way of thinking about it? I mean, a lot of times I speak a little bit loosely just so you can kind of get the spirit, you know. I hope you can fill in the blanks, but...
When and if we fuse one day,
mm-hmm.
then even though the adjuster doesn't come all the way down to the material level, the total fusion fact does.
Well, yeah, I mean, remember how fusion works again. You know, so, you know, like think of here's the bottom of the adjuster, okay, and you're working up, okay, and there's fusion. You know, but it's just this part that is now directly supreme-like and stuck to the adjuster. The rest of this stuff is not supreme-like yet. You know, and you've got to work all the way up through the local universe to get the rest of this stuff, you know, locked up and hanging on the adjuster as well. Doesn't need Marantia scaffolding underneath it to hold it up. You know, you aren't a first stage spirit until you leave the local universe. In other words, you haven't gotten all the rest of it hauled up there and stuck onto the adjuster. Okay, that's literally what you're doing, is you're ascending up to the local universe. You're bringing the rest of that stuff up and getting it stuck on the adjuster so the adjuster can be your body, and you don't need a Marantia body. You don't need Marantia scaffolding under part of you to hold you up. You can hang your whole self on the adjuster form. And the adjuster, you know, is your body, your first stage spirit.
Fusion is being a whole thing.
Yeah, but it's not. It's just the beginning. It's just, see, you know, if you know the use, the technical use of the word fusion, I mean, if I take, I don't have anything handy here, you know, imagine these are two blocks of iron, okay? When you fuse those together, you just stick the surfaces together. That's what you mean by fusion. You know, it literally means surface bonding. So fusion is just a surface bonding. You have to infuse yet. This is fusing. This is infusing. Okay? And that's why they say, you know, the mother influence dominates throughout the whole local universe career. Okay? Because, like I said, you are slowly infusing into the experiential nature of the adjuster. It's all a mother issue. It's not a father issue. A mother, you know, you, the whole local universe career, it's all about this experiential deity issue of bringing your experience and the adjuster's experience together as one.
So the matter's left behind. It's only the experience that's brought up.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You know, and, you know, like when you're a finaliter, you are your experiences. I say, I mean, it's only, yeah, that's what you're carrying forward, your experiential self.
It's kind of like you want to think that when you fuse, it would be like taking a piece of silver and using some flux and
soldering.
Right, and it's just, you know, we want to think that because we've grown up where the best notion of God, you know, was basically I die and then I'm standing right next to the infinite one. But at some point, you know, your logical mind needs to kick and say, well, now how exactly would that work? I think there's a difference between infinite and finite. They're not touching each other. So, you know, if I'm not touching each other, you know, if I'm not in direct contact now, I'm not going to be in direct contact when I die either, because I'm not magically going to somehow become infinite. It's just a matter of going, oh, there's a truth to that. But the facts, I got to bring in this whole issue of the greater facts. Facts involve time. You will one day stand in the immediate presence of the Father. But that way to the Father is a temporal way. Primitive man didn't understand that. Primitive man didn't understand, you know, the actuality of growth. He didn't understand that it's an evolutionary universe.
And even when we stand before the infinite Father, we won't know him in his full infinity.
Of course not. Because, of course, that would be impossible. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that. There's only one thing that you'll ever know of the Father. That one face that only looks at you. That's all you'll ever know of the Father. You can't know any of the rest of the Father. You'll never know the Father that I will see. Doesn't matter, you know, how far you go into the absonite or into the co-absolute, you know, you'll never know the Father that only I can see. I have an individual personality circuit to the Father. It's mine and mine alone. I share it with no one. Yeah. That circuit goes back to a face of the Father. There's a point on the Father that you know, where my circuit is grounded, anchored. That's my Father. My Father and your Father, but of course, it's one Father.
So like when we're looking at you, we're all seeing the same you. But when when we look at
the Father is the only personality that's like this. The Eternal Son, we all see exactly the same face. Because remember, the Father is not, essentially, he's not really a personality in the sense that the Eternal Son is a personality. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, there's the absolute personality, that's the Eternal Son. But then there's Father personality, and the easiest way, like I've said many times, to understand the differences, the Eternal Son has one face. All of us, when we stand on the Isle of Paradise, we're looking at the same face, that one absolute face of the eternal Son. We all see the same face. But the Father, the only way to understand the personality of the Father is to think of the Father as having an infinite number of faces, one for each of the, you know, the infinite number of beings that will exist, you know, at the end of everything in the cosmos infinite. There's one face for each.
That's his creation. We're his creation. So then that's why we
will
only see him like that.
He, you know, he's the absolute of absolutes. He's, you know, he's the face of faces. I mean, you know, if he's the face of faces, you know, and in eternity you have an infinite number of creatures, an infinite number of faces. If he's the face of faces, he has to have an infinite number of facets that link to those infinite number of faces.
For those people who don't respond and don't possibly survive, but perhaps the Father really wanted that face. Did he try again?
No, I mean, the way that works, you know, we've talked about that. I mean, okay, what's actually face-to-face? There's a measure of personality face-to-face with the Father personality. Okay, that measure of personality, that measure of purposing.
It's just a piece of a face that's in the Supreme.
Yeah, you know, right. Right. I mean, you know, it technically, from the bottom up, it goes into God the Almighty, but then God the Almighty and God the Mother come together as God the Supreme. It's, you know, it's part of the, you know, of the Supreme. So the Supreme, you know, that face that Lucifer, you know, used to see and can't see anymore because he's not personal anymore, that former face, that former Lucifer's face of the Father, you know, the Supreme now sees. I mean, it can't go away. I mean, it's not like somehow that face of the Father just melts away. I mean, the Father would change. The Father is eternal. The Father is changeless. You know, Father can't change. You know, so that, you know, that loop, that linkage, it has to still be there.
But it just becomes part of a bigger face. That
yeah, I mean, yeah, and exactly how we're supposed to, you know, I mean, it's a little bit hard to think, you know, understand how you're supposed to think about this power personality synthesis that is the Supreme. It starts to get a little more complicated. But yeah, you know, you can just start, it's like, well, I mean, should I think of somehow the Supreme has one, Supreme Being has one face and that sees many faces, or did I think of the Supreme Being as having multiple faces too? Something to kind of start, you know, playing with, you know, exactly how, what would be the best way to think about it. Okay.
The Eternal Son not only has at all times perfect knowledge concerning the status, thoughts, and manifold activities of all orders of paradise sonship, but he also has perfection of knowledge at all times regarding everything of spiritual value which exists in the hearts of all creatures in the primary central creation of eternity and in the secondary time creations of the coordinate creator sons.
Okay, so see, yeah, and again, just notice how they're very precise, okay? Everything of spiritual value. I mean, they could have just said value, but they want to make sure you don't think of something that has value. They want to think of something that is value. Okay, so we're talking about literally that which is value, spiritual value. But what's the qualification? Which exists in the heart. Okay, so all of that lower stuff down in the lower domain of the hourglass, no. Okay. Talking only the stuff that, you know, the spiritual value that is conformal with the cosmos, that's synchronized with the cosmos. Okay, that's what the Son knows, because that's all the Son can know, because for the Son to know it, it has to be able to get through the cosmos to the Son, so it has to be cosmos-like. And so that's, it has to be something that actually lives in the upper domain of your, you know, it's part of your personal self, not just part of your mere animal origin self. You know, just the mere energy of the sixth adjutant, say. Okay, it's not known, directly known by the Son. But when you've taken the threefold actuality and brought it into a harmony, and it lives as part of your personal self in that upper domain, in the heart of your being, that is intimately known. Yeah. You notice it isn't as strong a statement for us as it is for the Paradise Sons, where it says perfect knowledge concerning the status, thoughts, and manifold activities. It's like, well, phew, at least it's only the spiritual value things. It's like, well, that's just the eternal Son. Don't forget there's all the other beings too. Like, for instance, there's the absolute mind. The absolute mind might also know not just the spiritual value, but the actual thoughts, okay? right. I mean, there isn't anything that you can hide. Unless you're thinking that you're going to have some secret thoughts. Like, Lucifer thought he was going to have some secret thoughts. No. Okay. There is no such thing.
They've been watching his thoughts for a long time.
Right. Even low beings, can watch his thoughts. Okay, let alone the beings on Paradise. Okay.
And they do call them coordinate creator sons in the context of that paragraph.
Yes.
As if the mother weren't there.
Now that we've really developed that recognition of the word coordinate, you every time you see coordinate creator son, you think about it a little bit differently.
Catch on.
Right. You think about how much more intimate it is because of that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, here, just before we read this, Shane, see this, how they title this. It's the supreme revelation of the Father. I mean, it's just like I was trying to point out, when you think about, these beings and facets of deity and whatnot, that are coming down. I mean, when they come down, they may step down through the absolute and the absolute down to the supreme, but then it just penetrates, okay? Because when you think about the functioning of deity here in this chart, you have the Trinity of absoluteness and the Trinity of ultimacy. And you have the Trinity of Supremacy here in the supreme level. But you also have the Trinity of Supremacy here, in the level where we are, really. The sevenfold is there. I mean, the Trinity of Supremacy is, like I said, it's the Trinity fact, that allows it to come down from that definitive supreme level, down below that. The Trinity is the means for those things that have a direct linkage to the Trinity to also bring supremacy down into the finite, down through those lower levels of the sevenfold.
So you're saying that this level right here, the outer level, is where we...
The fifth functional level is where deity engages us, via the sevenfold. Remember, the sevenfold is creature-identified deity. That's how deity reaches us. So it reaches us by that level. So you can think of yourself being in this wedge. And you've got the supreme creators and the supreme controllers and et cetera. Yeah. Okay, so it always boils down to this. You're bringing it down, and then it's penetrating into the finite as some supreme expression, like the supreme revelation of the Father, or the supreme rule. Isn't that the name of that one section where it was supreme rule of the Father, I think, or something like that?
Was this the type of stuff that Lucifer was saying that people were being debauched by, learning this stuff?
Sure.
It just popped in my mind.
I mean,
like, this is why
the Father's supreme rules and in that other section. I mean, it's a little bit more of, you know, bringing in all of the administrative, you know, learning all the administrative stuff of the local universe and super universe and all that. But yeah, just the whole notion that you would need to somehow know about the details of the whole.
Well, he accused the finality. Yeah.
What's the battle cry?
Yeah.
Self-assertion. You know, I mean, the whole point is, you know, forget about all that crap, you know, the cosmos. It's just all about you, you know. So, you know, it's a pretty limited viewpoint. All right.
Seven, the supreme revelation of the Father. The eternal Son is a complete, exclusive, universal, and final revelation of the Spirit and the personality of the universal Father. All knowledge of and information concerning the Father must come from the eternal Son and his paradise sons. The eternal Son is from eternity and is holy and without spiritual qualification, one with the Father. In divine personality, they are coordinate. In spiritual nature, they are equal. In divinity, they are identical.
See, that's that, you know, real direct expression I was saying. I mean, see, you know, notice, must come. He's divested himself of all that. I mean, when you, if you're talking about, I'm looking for the spirit and the personality of the universal Father. Where do I find it? Okay, it's all there. If that's what you're looking for, that if you're looking for the, you know, the non-spiritual and the impersonal, okay, it's not there. Okay. But if you're looking for the Father, the universal Father, his spirit and personality, it's all there. Okay.
Why would they put a comma between concerning and the Father?
It makes it confusing. You got two things. All knowledge of the Father must come from, that's one statement. Information concerning the Father must come. It's two things, two different things coming put together as one.
If we're looking at the personality and the spirit, the personality of the Father, we look to the eternal Son, but is that our... Do we use the personality circuit for that?
No, I mean, you know, let's just put ourselves, just make it simple. Okay. Let's just, we're standing on paradise, and we want to know, okay, I take God the infinite, and I express God the infinite as an absolute personality, you know, an unqualified personality. I distill out of that whole God the infinite one absolute personal fact, okay, what does it look like? It looks like this thing called the eternal Son. You know, that's the one distillation of a pure spirit, you know, absolute personality. And that's what they mean by that. When you look at the Father, you know, when you're standing there and you're looking at the Father, you're not looking at that. See, actually, you're not looking at a pure spirit personality. You're looking at something that really we're kind of completely clueless of right now. Yeah. And then, you know, they'll talk about that in a minute. I mean, it's finding the Father is a lot more than just some personal journey. You got to find everything to find the Father. You can't just find spirit and personality. You got to find everything. That's a tall order. Okay.
I think John is asking, like, what's the phone number?
Yeah.
What circuit do I use?
Well, you know, again, you know, I mean, from that sense of where you are, you know, in the phone that you can pick up right now, you know, you dial this number and you get the eternal Son. That number is called the prayer number. You know, you dial this number and you get the universal Father. What's that number called? That's, you know, that's called the worship number. But of course, both of them, you know, there's a mother conduit for, you know, but in terms of who you're calling through that line, okay.
The character of God could not possibly be intrinsically improved upon in the person of the Son, for the divine Father is infinitely perfect. But that character and personality are amplified by divestment of the non-personal and non-spiritual, for revelation to creature beings. The first source and center is much more than a personality, but all of the spirit qualities of the Father personality of the first source and center are spiritually present in the absolute personality of the eternal Son.
So they're trying to give you different ways to just kind of understand this. See, I mean, it's like, okay, so imagine you had it all together. It would be a really cloudy picture. There's all this different stuff. It would be so much easier to see the spirit personality if you pulled it out of the mix with everything else. So that's one way to understand why he did this. He puts it out so it's not clouded by all this other stuff. You can get that very directly. And as a personality, you'll find that first. And the rest of it second. You know, before you find the Father, you find the Son.
The Son's got a big job. You know, to do that whole thing.
No one gets to the Father except through the Son. I mean, that's another way to, you know, to think about that whole bit about direct linkage to the Father. I mean, you know that no one gets to the Father except through the Son. You know, and you know, you just take that up to actually thinking about the Father on paradise. Okay, I mean, you can't get to the Father. You know, how you think about it literally. You're at the center of the Isle of Paradise, and you have this, you know, think of it as just a simple hemispherical presence. That's the infinite spirit. And then inside of that, you have another hemisphere. That's the eternal Son. And then inside of that, you have the Father. You can't get to the Father except through the Spirit and through the Son. They don't stand, you know, side by side on paradise. The Father is inside of the Son, and the Son is inside of the Spirit.
It's concentric circles, mainly right. Concentric spheres.
Right. Those hemispheres make three concentric circles, okay? You know. I mean, it's just very literal. You can't get to the Father except through the Son. You can't get to the Son except through the Spirit.
Okay. The primal Son and his sons are engaged in making a universal revelation of the spiritual and personal nature of the Father to all creation. In the central universe, the super universes, the local universes, or on the inhabited planets, it is a paradise Son who reveals the universal Father to men and angels. The eternal Son and his sons reveal the avenue of creature approach to the universal Father. And even we of high origin understand the Father much more fully as we study the revelation of his character and personality in the eternal Son and in the sons of the eternal Son. The Father comes down to you as a personality only through the divine sons of the eternal Son. And you attain the Father by this same living way. You ascend to the Father by the guidance of this group of divine sons. And this remains true, notwithstanding that your very personality is a direct bestowal of the universal Father.
See, again, that's what we're just talking about. Yes. Personality is a direct bestowal of the Father, and it's the Father's personality circuit, but it can't actually get there except through the Son. I mean, even just think about that circuit, trying to get to the Father in the middle of paradise. That circuit has to pass through the Spirit and the Son to find its anchor point. It can't get to them except through the Son.
It's just a literal thing.
You know, the Father's at the core, and he's expressed outward from the core. He's at the core. You can't get to the core of the tree except through all the rings of the tree. Okay? It's just the way it is.
In all these widespread activities of the far-flung spiritual administration of the eternal Son, do not forget that the Son is a person, just as truly and actually as the Father is a person. Indeed, to beings of the one-time human order, the Eternal Son will be more easy to approach than the Universal Father. In the progress of the pilgrims of time through the circuits of Havona, you will be competent to attain the Son long before you are prepared to discern the Father.
Okay, just before you read that last one, okay, just bring it out again. Just remind yourself, you know, how literal this is. The Father reaches down to the sevenfold and engages you. And you have to follow that staircase back up. So you start ascending. The first thing that you find is the Master's Son standing on Salvington. Then you keep ascending. And then you find the Three Ancients of Days standing on Uversa. Then you keep ascending. Then you find the Seventh Master Spirit on the Seventh Circuit of Avona. And then you keep ascending. And you find, well, not the Supreme Being. He's not findable yet. He doesn't exist in finite. You find supremacy, capital S supremacy. You find the functioning of deity on the supreme level. Technically what you find, that personal purposive presence that's functioning, you find the Universal Mother, okay, on the sixth circuit of Avona. You keep ascending. You find the Infinite Spirit, the third person on the fifth circuit. You keep ascending. You find the Eternal Son, like they're just saying, on the fourth circuit.
Long before.
You've got to journey the whole third circuit before you find the Father. Okay, so it's a long journey. These are long journeys here. You know how big that circuit is, and how big that's. These are really big circuits. Okay, so it's a long time between finding the Son and finally finding the Father on the third circuit. You just literally are going up the staircase. You find them in order. Okay, so. It's a very straight, very literal thing when they say that. It's just you just bring out the chart. Oh, yeah, that's right. I've got to go up the chart. I can't skip any step. Okay.
More of the character and merciful nature of the Eternal Son of Mercy you should comprehend as you meditate on the revelation of these divine attributes, which was made in loving service by your own Creator Son. One time Son of Man on earth, now the exalted sovereign of your local universe, the Son of Man and the Son of God, indicted by a divine counselor assigned to formulate this statement depicting the Eternal Son of Paradise.
Okay, so, that last little thing, is, again, he's here, Michael's here, he who's seen me has seen the Father. And it's like, okay, technically, how does that work? He who has seen a Creator Son has seen the Eternal Son. And he who has seen the Eternal Son has seen the Universal Father. That's technically what he's saying. Yeah. Remember what they tell you when you have a bestowal son is a magisterial son, they never say, he who has seen me has seen the Father. They just say, he who has seen me has seen the Son. Mm-hmm. You have to just remind yourself, and if you've seen the Eternal Son, you've seen the Father as a spirit, personal fact. The difference is with the Creator Son on the seventh bestowal, that is still the same. It's a Paradise Son. He could say that too, but he can add one little notch to that. He can bring the Father into the discussion directly, because on the seventh bestowal, that expression of the Eternal Son is doing what?
Revealing the Father.
Yeah, right. He's consecrated himself to the will of the Father. Right. So, but still, in terms of literalness, it's one thing that you've seen the actions of the will of the Father. But in terms of literally just the fact of what you're seeing the Eternal Son, and through the Eternal Son, you're seeing the spirit personality of the Father. And that's still the case. Okay. Whew. Well, that was a long journey for those two sections.
You answered a lot of our questions.
Okay.
I guess I like to think of the thought adjuster as...
it's certainly, you know, it's attempting to teach you in an indirect way. It makes a form in the higher domains of your mind, a form that would be very useful to you. And it tries to drift it down into the domain of your consciousness in hopes that you won't break it up. Now, if you allow that form to come down into your vision, you could learn from that form. You could go, whoa, that's really useful. I could use that to fix that situation. So he's an indirect teacher. It becomes more direct once you're a first circler.
But he's giving you the adjuster's giving you a unifying pattern.
Right. And it's just, and he's also, of course, most of the time he's not trying to give you something for the moment. Right. He's giving you something for eternity. So you have to just sort of, there's a truth to teaching assistant. but it's a very high type of teaching and assistance. Mostly not for the moment. Mostly, it's for eternity, because seldom is the moment a distillation of eternity. Eternity is not often directly applicable to the moment. The moment is often filled with lots of temporality.
And he's helped with our Saturn and having it expressed at all or influencing us when we're at this stage could have major ramifications.
Yeah, that's another way to think about what it's doing. And not only is it trying to find ways to kind of bring eternity down into time, but it's also trying to find ways to bring your time into eternity. Like they say, those first 8 years of your life are very, very important in that process of what your path to eternity is going to be. And of course the adjuster, misses the whole beginning of that. And justice doesn't come into play until about age 6.
Is that why the hand that rocks the cradle?
Still fraternizes with destiny, with eternity. See, there's how important it is, yeah. Yeah.
In regard to the thought adjuster as an experiential, we were talking about before, where does memory come in?
Well, for instance, when they talk about memories being saved between your death and your resurrection, the adjuster's saving spirit copies of, the spiritizable memories. What part of the adjuster is going to have those memories? The experiential part of the adjuster just has those memories, not that existential, changeless part. Right, that's the whole,
So memory does follow?
The memories of your life that can stick to an adjuster are saved. The memories that only stick to matter, that are now stuck only to your brain. Your brain has got a whole bunch of memories stuck in it. That don't have any sort of an interface that can stick to an adjuster. So all those get left behind when you die. All those merely material things,
Not
necessarily love, but just anything that has some sort of cosmic character, something that relates to the big picture, not just to the moment, the passing moments. But now, it's not like those memories are completely lost. Most of your life is recorded. And so when you wake up in the mansion worlds, you can look up the records of your material life. You won't have the memories directly, but you can look up the records and reassimilate the memories. You can reacquire those memories because an awful lot of your life is recorded by your angels. So you can reassimilate those memories, but they're not. They get you via the records of the angels, not via the adjuster.
Do you think they'll remember these things differently than I do?
You know, again, you know, they'll record it the way you would like to remember it. You know, they'll record what's worth remembering. I mean, they're obviously not, you know, going to spend all kinds of fruitless time, you know, recording meaningless stuff. You know. Yeah, Jason? We got to quit here. We're going pretty late.
All man's universe romancing may not be fact, but much, very much, is truth. Mm-hmm. I think it kind of relates to a lot of what we were saying.
Yeah, yeah. You notice how I tried to bring that up a couple times. I mean, you know, allow the truth to endure and give it better facts to flow through. All right, so we'll pick up on infinite person number 3 next week. Let's take a moment to reflect on the evening here.